is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, May 28, 2019. I'm Buster Olney, and our producer every day is Josh Macri. On Monday, we got sad news. Bill Buckner, longtime major leaguer, passed away at age 69. His family said in a statement, after battling the disease of Lewy body dementia, Bill Buckner passed away early the morning of May 27th, surrounded by his family. Bill fought with courage and grit as he did all things in his life. Our hearts are broken, but we are at peace knowing he's in the arms of his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Buckner played 22 seasons in the majors, and we'll be talking with Tim Kirchen coming up about his place in baseball history. Boston second baseman Dustin Pedroia met with reporters on Monday after being pulled back from his minor league rehabilitation assignment. He was moved to the 60-day injured list, and he told reporters he's not sure if he'll play again.
It's to a point now where my knee is not allowing me to play every day. It's taken a while to realize that. I've tried so many things, you know, from braces to orthotics to rehab methods to seeing different doctors to, you know, every type of treatment possible. So, you know, I'm at a point right now where, you know, I need some time. And that's where my status is.
The Red Sox played the Indians yesterday, and they beat them 12-5, blowing the game open in the fifth inning.
3-2 again from Perez. Swung on, hit deep to left. This could be out of here, and it is gone. Two-run home run, Sandy Leon up into the monster seats, and the Red Sox have blown it open at Fenway Park. It's 8-3 Boston. Next pitch, swung on off the end of the bat, deep to right field. Back goes Mercado to the fence. Off his glove, it's a home run. J.D. Martinez has his 10th home run of the season, and the Red Sox lead 10-3.
Those calls from Keith Olbermann on ESPN Radio. The Yankees beat the Padres 5-2 with help from Brett Gardner.
And Brett Gardner, driven deep to right field. There it goes! See ya! A two-run home run for Gardner. The Yankees take the lead 3-2.
Michael Kay on the Yes Network, the Yankees got great work out of their whole staff because they went with an opener and they used a bunch of relievers and it worked out. Now, during the game, Manny Machado got booed by the crowd, and after the game, he verbally sparred with reporters. We'll hear that sound and we'll talk about what happened coming up with Tim. The Mariners and the Rangers, and Malik Smith had quite a day because he stole second, he stole third, and then in the bottom of the eighth inning, this happened.
Here's the stretch. Here comes Smith. The toss to first. The throw home. Malik strikes home. Holy smokes. Malik Smith just steals home plate. He stole second. He stole third. He swipes home. The thievery of Malik Smith tonight. Three stolen bases in one inning. And Smith has four steals on the night.
That from Rick Riz, 7-10, ESPN Seattle. The final score was 6-2. The Dodgers played the Mets, and man, Cody Bellinger put on a show.
The 1-0 pitch, and Frazier goes the other way and punches it into right for a base hit. Around third being waved, Michael Conforto's Bellinger charges, comes up firing to the plate. Out is Conforto. 2-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Right center field and deep, it is gone. Way up into the bleachers in right center. Cody Bellinger is 19th of the season, unloads on DeGrom, and the Dodgers have a 2-1 lead. And the one strike pitch, fastball hit in the air to right. This should score one run. Backing up, Bellinger makes the catch and straightaway right. And a strong throw to third and tagging and out at third base.
Yeah, so Cody Bellinger, a home run, cut down a couple guys on the bases. Those calls from Roxy Bernstein on ESPN Radio. The Brewers played the Twins, two good teams going at it. In the bottom of the second inning, the Twins took a lead.
Man, the pitch, a swing and a drive, left center field and deep. Back it goes, deep it goes, and gone! Buxton with a three-run homer. 4-0 Twins.
Corey Provis, Treasure Island Baseball Network. In this game, however, the Twins, who live by the sword, well, they died by the home run sword.
Rogers throws. Fly ball, deep left. This ball is gone, and the Brewers take the lead. 5-4 Milwaukee.
620 WTMJ. The Brewers win 5-4. Oakland is coming on like a freight train. They beat the Angels 8-5 with help from Josh Fegley.
Here's the 1-2, and it's driven to left down the line. If it's fair, it's gone. It is, and Fegley has done it again. And the A's take a 4-3 lead. Josh Fegley is on fire.
That was Kent Korak, 95.7 the game. The Astros beat the Cubs 6-5 with help from Robinson Chirinos.
Here's Chirinos. Still nobody out. Runners on first and second. Three infielders on the left. First pitch swinging. Drives it to left field. Schwarber across. And it's over his head and off the out-of-town scoreboard. Scoring is Brantley. Gurriel in the third base on the double by Chirinos. The Astros take the lead 3-2.
Sparksy, Steve Sparks, KBME 790 AM with that call. The Rays beat the Jays. Kevin Kiermaier making a great play along the way.
So they've added some pieces. There's a high fly ball deep to center. Kiermaier to the wall. And he got it. Kiermaier grabbed that one against the wall. Wow, what a catch.
Dwayne Statz and the Rays television network. Pirates and the Reds split a doubleheader. Along the way, Josh Bell did this.
Oh, boy.
High and deep to left. Winker. And it's gone. A home run. Josh Bell. A high arcing home run, and the Pirates have the lead back in the seventh.
That from the Pirates Television Network. Josh, have we gotten word that Josh Bell is in the Home Run Derby yet?
Not yet, but I'm sure we'll be the first to hear because he's a friend of the program, and it seems like he's gotten even hotter since his appearance on the podcast.
Yeah, we're on a mission. A couple of years ago, we were all over Madison Bumgarner. We had to get Bumgarner in the Derby. We're going to have more success this year, I believe.
100%.
Deep center field.
The game.
It's gone!
Of the day.
Game of the day, the Rockies and the Diamondbacks in Colorado. And Nolan Arenado came to the plate in the bottom of the seventh inning with the Rockies trailing 3-1.
Nolan, base hit down the left field line. This will tie it up. Nolan Arenado once again.
That from AT&T Sportsnet. The score was tied 3-3. Bottom of the 11th, this happened.
And he'll hit it up the middle into center field for a base hit. Desmond rounds third. He will score. Raimel Tapia with a game winner. His first in the big leagues. He knew it. Raised the right hand in the air as he ran up the first baseline. The Rockies, the walk-off kings over the last couple of days.
That from 850 KOA. Now, a lot of those post-game interviews that are done with the Gatorade shower comes in, some of them are a little bit lame. This one was awesome. Ian Desmond Tapia doing the interview with AT&T Sportsnet, and they were both kind of looking over their shoulder because they knew Charlie Blackmon was coming in with a whole tub.
Well, I'm with both of the guys who contributed to this win. You guys, three walk-offs for this team in the last 4 days. What does that say about this team?
He told me to tell you that he's a really good hitter and he loves crabs.
Come on. And this time you're going to do it on Memorial Day in front of these fans. What is this like for you?
Only one thing. Let's go, Rocky!
And then the two of them walked off from that walk-off interview done by Taylor McGregor. Let's get to it. So on Monday, ESPN Radio was at Fenway Park, and Keith Olbermann talked with Terry Francona, the Indians manager. Of course, was the first manager for Dustin Pedroia in the big leagues. This right after word broke that Dustin Pedroia going on the 60-day injured list. Give a listen.
Tito, I've known you a long time and never known you to make anything up or hide away from anything. Assess the Cleveland Indians. Where are you? Where is this club at?
I was going to say, I thought there was a butt coming when you said that.
No.
We're in transition. I mean, we had the most turnover this winter since I've been here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we were really hoping that we could kind of lean on our starting pitching and score enough runs and, you know, build some confidence and go from there. Well, we had a couple of our pitchers get injured, which doesn't help, and we haven't hit, and we've been we haven't hit at all. You know, I mean, it's really been tough. So that puts pressure on the starters. It just kind of, you know, it's like you're chasing your tail sometimes. We're trying to figure out where we're at. That's the best way I can say it, is how we play going forward will probably dictate a lot of what we do, because, you know, we don't want to get to a point where we have to have like a rebuild, you know, and lose 3 years. Nobody wants to do that. But I think you also have to be honest in your assessment of where you are.
News from the other clubhouse today, formerly your clubhouse. Dustin Pedroia saying he doesn't want to have surgery again. He isn't retiring. He's going on the 60-day DL. He's going to step back and reassess things. He hasn't really seriously considered retirement. If there's one Red Sox player from your tenure here that you're associated with, it's him. I know the two of you long enough to remember him coming up to you in the dugout in spring training and ask for more at-bats and address you as Mr. Francona. That's how far back it goes. What are your thoughts when you hear today's news?
Well, one, that didn't last long.
No, I know that.
He used other terms pretty quickly after that.
It was an adjective in front of Francona.
Yes. He's one of the most special people that I've ever been around, if not the most special. And I bet you I'm not the only person to say that. He came over here this morning. We talked for about a half hour. And the feeling I got was he knows he's emptied the tank. I mean, this kid has given everything in his power to be the player, you know, whatever player he can be. And I think the best way I can put it is I think he knows he's kind of emptied the tank.
Pleasure to talk to you. This is our first interview.
It's about time you showed up. I've been wondering where the hell you've been.
We only know each other 37 years. And I'd like to say, lastly, would you please stop annoying me by being 85 days younger than me?
You know what? The good part of that is I feel about 85 years older than everybody, so you're safe there.
Thanks, Terry.
Thanks, Dan.
We'll be back in a moment with Tim Kirchen, but first I want to tell you about TD Ameritrade. In baseball, there are a lot of tough decisions to make, like which pitch to throw in a 3-2 count, whether you should bunt or steal to get a runner into scoring position, and of course, ketchup or mustard. The folks at TD Ameritrade know just how crucial decisions can be. That's why they offer a trade desk team that is always just a phone call away whenever you're stuck in a jam. Have a question about a trade? Don't feel 100%? Before you step to the plate, chat with a TD Ameritrade trade desk and get a strategy gut check. Not only will someone help you decide if you're on the right path, but you'll always take away valuable info for your next at-bat. Visit tdameritrade.com/baseballtonight to get started. That's tdameritrade.com/baseballtonight. Member SIPC.
Seam heads rejoice.
Nerd alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirchen on Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirchen covers baseball for ESPN. He was doing a game for ESPN at Fenway Park last night, Tim, and a lot of the drama built up in that game was not on the field. Over the last hours, whether or not you would make your flight, because we know what an anxious traveler you are. You need to be at the airport at least 6 hours ahead of a flight in order to feel comfortable about it. And you were still in the press box. Is the game ended at about what, 7:45 for a 9:15 flight?
Yeah, and I made it with plenty of despair. And I didn't bring any of this up. This is typical Ravi and Eduardo Perez, who leave for an 8 o'clock flight at 7 o'clock and don't even worry about it. Nobody travels better than those guys do. They don't care. They don't worry about anything. And I worry about everything. We're the worst combination as a group in the booth because we're so different when it comes to that. But I made my flight with plenty of time to spare yesterday. It was a miracle. I got a ride to the airport, and Ashley was the one that took me. She said, I'm a Jersey girl. Don't worry about me. And she drove really fast. We made it in plenty of time.
And I was guessing you probably got a police escort, given the big deal that they made about it on air.
I did not make a big deal about it on the air. They did. And they are always giving me a hard time about this. Look, I'm a nervous wreck at the airport. Everywhere else, I'm fine. But I just don't have any faith that I'm going to get through security in time. And it's a great feeling when I get through security and I realize I'm not missing this flight. Because I had to get home last night, and I made it.
All right, let's let this be the sound that Bill Buckner is remembered for. This is from April 8th, 2008. He goes back to Fenway Park in a celebration of champions, and he's introduced to the Fenway Park crowd for a first pitch by radio voice Joe Castiglione.
Now it's time to welcome the star who will throw our ceremonial first pitch on this day that we honor champions. And how happy we are that amidst this celebration and joy, this Red Sox alumnus has come back to join us. He amassed Hall of Fame caliber credentials in his 21-year Major League career, and the Red Sox would never have won the 1986 American League pennant without him. Won't you please welcome him back to Boston and let him know that he is welcome always. Number six, Bill Buckner.
And Tim, those cheers would go on for about 2 minutes, and then this is what he sounded like when he threw out the first pitch to his old teammate, Dwight Evans.
Uniform and one of the kindest gentlemen to be a part of our alumni. Thank you again, Bill Buckner.
Don Arcillo, of course, then the television voice of the Red Sox, welcoming Bill Buckner back to Fenway Park. Tim, in his career, 2,715 hits, 1980 National League batting champion, 1981 All-Star. He led the National League in doubles twice. He played in the World Series twice, 1,077 runs. Someone whose career I always felt like was taken completely out of context because of just one moment. What do you think?
Yeah, he's one of the most underrated, underappreciated players. We completely have mangled his legacy because he should be remembered not for one error in one World Series game, but for the fact that he was one of the best hitters of his time, had more hits than Ted Williams, never struck out 40 times in a season, never struck out three times in a game, ever. And he played the outfield very well. He played first base very well until his ankles went away. And in all my time I've been around him, I'm not sure I met a more competitive guy, a guy who prepared and cared about winning and played harder than Bill Buckner. And that's how he should be remembered. And yet, the way we do things, we remember that error more often, and that's just not right, and it's not fair.
His legacy is completely out of context. And Tim, I've always felt like that moment in Game 6 of the 1986 World Series is completely out of context. I'm sure you'll agree with me on this. They had a 5-3 lead, a two-run lead going into the bottom of the last inning of Game 6, and other mistakes were made. Other players made mistakes along the way to set up this moment where Mookie Wilson's ground ball went through his legs. And by the way, he shouldn't have even been on the field because, as you know, all that year, John McNamara, the Red Sox manager, would take him out at the end of games and he would put Dave Stapleton in at first base. He did not in this game. There's always been a controversy about why that happened the way it happened. But either way, he was on the field for that moment. And even after the Red Sox lost that game and blew that two-run lead, they still had an opportunity to win Game 7. They actually had a lead in Game 7, and they weren't able to finish it off.
Buster, I was there that night, and if you ask the average fan, they think that was Game 7. It was Game 6. They also think if he had fielded that ball cleanly and gotten the out at first, that the Red Sox would have won the World Series, which score was tied when the error was made. So if he had made the play cleanly, they would have gone to extra innings. There was no guarantee that they would have won in extra innings. And then they had a 3-0 lead in Game 6, in the sixth inning of Game 7. So that's been completely taken out of context, as you suggested, and you're absolutely right. And that's why people need to understand the history of that night and of Bill Buckner and make an adjustment now, because there were so many others that had to do with the losing of that World Series for the Red Sox.
Mookie Wilson put out a great statement last night. I was saddened to hear about Bill's death. We developed a friendship that lasted well over 30 years. I felt badly for some of the things he went through. Bill was a great, great baseball player whose legacy should not be defined by one play. And Tim, I do wonder, we talked in the wintertime when Harold Baines was voted in the Hall of Fame, if there'll be some reassessments of some candidates, whether it's a Dale Murphy. And Kyle Benning, our friend who Bleacher tweets at us a lot, and we love them all, tweeted at us last night, the 1980s are overlooked, golden age of first baseman hitting for average. Keith Hernandez, batting title, 296 average. Don Mattingly, batting title, 2,153 career hits. And then, of course, Bill Buckner. Are any of those guys now Hall of Fame worthy? Tim, I think we're at a point where we do have to do maybe some reconsideration of some of these guys. What do you think?
Well, and I agree, but if we do, we have to, again, assign a value to batting average and to the number of hits that somebody got. But we don't really care about batting average anymore, unfortunately, and we don't care about how many hits anybody got, unfortunately, when that's kind of a big part of the game. But if you didn't walk a whole lot, then you're not a valuable player. And I think it's time to relook at a lot of the things that we don't look at anymore. And I think it's a mistake, and Bill Buckner is a perfect example. So is Keith Hernandez, so is Don Mattingly, so is Steve Garvey. There are a lot of guys who play the game a certain way when certain statistics were not important back then, and now they are. So to penalize them because we look at things differently now, I just don't think that's the right way to go.
So before your game last night, Dustin Pedroia met with reporters as the Red Sox announced that he's going back on the 60-day injured list. I think it's at this point, it's fair to speculate whether or not he's played in his final game. He's played only 9 games the last 2 seasons. He's done all of the work that the doctors and athletic trainers have asked him to do. He had a knee surgery. He turns 36 later this year, and it hasn't worked. He talked with the reporters about the discomfort. And there was something, Tim, yesterday when he was asked by a reporter about whether or not he's going to play again, he basically said, I don't know. I love that answer from Dustin Pedroia. I love the fact that, you know, we talk about how father time is undefeated, and he was not going to give in in that moment. And I don't know if there's going to be a day in his lifetime where he concedes that, yes, his career is over. But some part of me, knowing his personality, knowing that nobody in the history of baseball has loved to play baseball more than Dustin Pedroia, I love the fact that he wasn't giving up yet. I don't think he's going to play again, but he's not going to relent, which is who he is.
Of course. But yes, Buster, you're right on all of that. I'm not sure he's going to play again. But for him to concede even at all yesterday that I need to take a break was a sign of how bad this is. We talked to Tito Francona yesterday, and Pedroia, of course, went over to talk to him yesterday, and Tito said that Pedroia is at peace, that he's done everything that he can. He's at peace that he has emptied the tank. That doesn't sound like he's going to play a whole lot more, which will be unfortunate, but when you try as hard as he does, and nobody tries harder than that guy, at some point you just have to acknowledge that this is not working. That's where he was yesterday, and he said, the frustrating part is I can feel good one day, and the next day I can't even walk. That you can't play baseball, you can't play in the middle infield without being able to move, and he just can't move like he used to. But no matter what happens to him, we'll never forget that guy for the things that he brought to the Red Sox. David Ortiz once told me, I did a word association game with David Ortiz a couple years ago, and I said, Dustin Pedroia. And he said, the only player I would pay to watch play. That's how much David Ortiz admired the way that Dustin Pedroia has gone about it all these years.
Yeah, I'll never forget the postseason last year. I was covering the Red Sox, and there was that play involving the Dodgers and the Milwaukee Brewers, and Manny Machado stepped on Jesus Aguilar's foot running over first base, his ankle. And the Red Sox players were just furious, and because they were reminded again that Pedroia's career basically ended when Manny slid into him in April of 2017. That was the beginning of the end for Dustin. And I felt like it wasn't so much about the slide, But the fact that they saw this person who loves the game more than anybody had something taken away, you know, that they felt bad for Pedroia that he had it taken away from him. Those guys all have great Pedroia stories. I'll give you mine, you know, and there's, there isn't an active player about whom there are more legends and stories. The one that I always like to tell people is what Alex Bregman told me a few years ago, how he was 9 or 10 years old and he was the bat boy for the New Mexico Lobos and they were playing against Arizona State and New Mexico was getting blown out. And in the last inning of the final game of that series, in this complete wipeout, here's Alex Bregman, 9 or 10 years old, and he's watching this guy on the other team running as hard as he possibly can, trying to get another hit. And as Alex told the story, he can't even remember whether or not the player got a hit, but he'll never forget the effort to the degree that he and his father talked about it in the car after the game. And Alex's dad said to him, that's something you're always going to remember your whole life. And, of course, the player was Dustin Pedroia, which, you know, is absolutely apropos. Give me your favorite Pedroia story.
Well, there's so many of them. But yesterday, we can't forget, Buster, how little that guy is. He's 5'6" and a half. He's got the smallest hands of any major league player I've ever seen. And to be that small and be that good is just remarkable. So Tito told a story again yesterday how John Farrell, big man, picked up Pedroia, stuffed him in a trash can head first, and I'm quoting here, and Tito's saying his little feet were just like fluttering at the top of the trash can, and he's screaming at John Farrell, "You can't do this to me! I'm the MVP!" And that's who Pedroia's always been, and just a classic case of a little guy who said, "You don't think I could do this? Let me show you what I can do." And that's what I've always admired about him is he's been told no 1,000 times in his life and his career, and each time the answer from him is always, "Yes, I can."
Yeah, our old friend Peter Gammons saw Pedroia the day that he went to Fenway Park to be introduced after he was the 64th player taken in the 2004 draft, and Pedroia was so angry about that. Like, he couldn't believe the teams didn't see how great he was, and they would pick 63 other players, and so he promised to Peter, "I'm going to be the first guy who reaches the big leagues from this draft." That was his personality. That is his personality. And as I say, I love the fact that he's not conceding that his career is over. All right, I mentioned Manny Machado. He was at Yankee Stadium yesterday. He got booed by the fans there, and afterward kind of got into it with reporters. Give a listen to this.
You're in New York. I get booed everywhere I go. Great players get booed, so happens.
Was it about the average, about par for the course?
Huh?
Was it about the average volume, par for the course, would you say? I mean, obviously you're a target because you're a great player and you signed a big contract.
I just answered that question.
Well, I'm asking you to compare this to other experiences.
How can you compare? A boo's
volume,
a boo.
Decibel level?
A boo's a boo.
Really?
Well, some boos are loud.
110 decibels versus 30.
We took the L, and that sucks. There's nothing worse than that, so.
And he was asked about possibly signing with the Yankees the last offseason.
You visited here, you know, as a free agent. Did you think this was going to be the place you're going to play? Did you kind of think?
Is that a baseball question? Is that about the game? Or did you get here late?
Yeah, and so at that point, he mentioned that there were ground rules, and then he walked out of the interview. And, Tim, I thought, look, the way that this played out was probably perfect for everybody. Manny Machado got $300 million from the San Diego Padres. He seems like he's really happy there. The Yankees had interest in him, but it was a measured interest, maybe not beyond $200 million. There were questions in the organization about whether or not he would fit New York, and maybe this was sort of one of those moments that underscored that. What do you think?
Yeah, and I just don't get it sometimes, Buster. Those questions seem to be legitimate. Maybe I'm biased because I ask questions for a living, but I didn't think it was necessary for Manny Machado to be that petulant when all he has to do is answer the question.
Yes.
And maybe this is a reminder that New York is a different place, and maybe he is more comfortable in San Diego. I've always felt like he's said and done all the right things since he signed with the Padres. Yesterday, I'm not sure he said and did all the right things. Just speak to the reporter civilly and let's move on. And I didn't see that yesterday.
Yeah, you know what? It'd be great. Next time he's in Atlanta, go find Chipper Jones and ask him about how to handle New York and New York reporters and booing in New York, because nobody did it better than Chipper did. In fact, he named one of his children after Shea Stadium. Because he's always talked about how much he liked to play there, where he would get booed and he would get taunted with chants of Larry, Larry, All right, so Tim, yesterday Memorial Day, and I got this over the weekend when I was around the Cardinals and the Braves. Look, the Braves had played 33 games in 34 days, and yet some of their guys were surprised they were off on Memorial Day yesterday. Two teams not playing. I don't get it. We've had this situation the last couple of years where teams might not be playing on Labor Day or 4th of July or Memorial Day. It seems like you have to figure out a way to get everybody playing, Tim.
Yeah, I totally agree, Buster. We talked about this on the broadcast yesterday. Jackie Robinson Day, July 4th, Memorial Day.
There you go.
Should be playing. And look, I can appreciate how difficult it is to put the schedule together. Can't play more than 20 straight days. Have to have more off days this year. I believe it's 25 now than in recent years in order to keep the players healthier. I understand all the issues, but those are days, since we're celebrating something so important like Memorial Day or July the 4th, everyone should be playing on those days, and I'm always confused when they're not. Again, I have sympathy for the schedule makers. That is such a difficult job. But you should star those games and say everybody plays today. Everyone should have played yesterday. That's the way I look at it.
Tim, thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you. I'm glad you made your flight.
Yeah, me too. Way too much was made out of that, especially by my two broadcast partners. But we're done. I'm home. Everything's safe.
We'll be back in a moment with Jack Flaherty. But first, I want to tell you about Lightstream. Are your credit card bills keeping you up at night? Interest rates in the double digits? Be smart and pay off your credit card balances with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. Get a fixed rate as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay. You could save thousands in interest. Get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and there are no fees. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Plus, Lightstream is a division of SunTrust Bank, one of the nation's largest financial institutions, so you can have complete peace of mind. Want to save even more? My listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/BBTN. That's LIGHTSTREAM.com/BBTN.
Subject to credit approval, rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/BBTN for more information.
So over the weekend, I caught up with Jack Flaherty, right-hander for the St. Louis Cardinals. And he's really good talking about the debate that was going on at high school about whether or not he should be a position player or a pitcher. And his pitching coach at that time, Ethan Katz, encouraged him to be a pitcher. Give a listen.
I would usually start my day of practice with get my throwing in.
Yeah.
And I'd go through, you know, pitching and everything on that end. And then I'd go do defense, go do, like, my defensive drills, take my ground balls, and then we go back and we run through some more, like, some drills or, you know, bunt, like going through bunt plays and little stuff like that. We'd go through that. And anytime it came around to hitting, he'd always joke and he'd say, "You don't need that. Just go put that bat down. Like, you're a pitcher anyway." And he would always just tell me, I'm a pitcher. And I'd always look at him and be like, I'm not. I don't care what you say. Like, I'm not a pitcher. And he ended up being right. It's funny to say, but yeah, it was always fun. I mean, you know, you throw BP sometimes, and you always throw something else up there, and then pop something up, and be like, "I told you, you're just a pitcher." So he always had his fun with it.
He also talked about whether or not he might actually be a basketball player in high school rather than playing baseball.
It wasn't an easy decision. I started off playing. I played both sports since I was 5 years old. And the difference for me was baseball. I always had the same group of guys, like the same team, like the same core of guys that I grew up playing with. And we played on the same travel team all the way up. Basketball was the same way. But baseball, I felt like I played on a different team here, a different team there. Like, there was always times I was playing with different guys. Basketball, I still played the same group of guys. Like, those guys, all of them were like family. I played the same group of guys, and they were all a year older, so they went to high school before me. But when I got to high school, I was doing both. I would go to baseball practice and go to basketball at night and kind of back and forth. And my coach, he wasn't telling me to make a decision. He was just like, I don't want you to kill yourself right now. Like, you know, I know you feel like you can do both, but just go do that right now. Come back, play baseball. You may not start on varsity right away. We got to get you back in shape once basketball's over with, but you know, just go do it. Like, I got no problem with you doing it. And come play baseball once it's over, because it overlapped a little bit. And I took a few days, and for me it was, I didn't love, well, not playing with that core group of guys that I grew up playing with when I played basketball. And it wasn't the same for me. Baseball, I happened to go to a high school that I knew some guys that I played with growing up, and there's three guys on that team that I grew with playing up. Another guy who was a little bit older, but I grew up playing with those guys and played on the same team all the growing up all the way through. So for me, I still had that there, and basketball just wasn't there for me. I didn't quite love it as much, so I eventually made the decision. It wasn't easy, but you know, it's worked out so far.
I think you would have been basketball. Have you ever kind of wondered about if you followed that path?
No, it would have been. It was one of those things that I had to work a little bit harder at, and it didn't come as easy to me as certain things in baseball did, but I'll never doubt myself and say I couldn't do anything. I feel like whatever sport I picked, I feel like I could have been pretty good at it.
We'll be back in a moment with Todd Radom, but first I want to tell you about DXL. Listen up, guys. If you're big or tall, you know what a pain it is to find clothes that fit. So a trip to DXL needs to be on your to-do list. At DXL, big and tall is all they do. They've spent years developing their own sizing patterns to make sure big guys get a comfortable fit every time. Pair that with over 100 brands and you've got the one-stop shop for men's big and tall. Whether you're looking for jeans, hoodies, suits, or shoes, DXL's got you covered for every occasion in stores or online at DXL.com. DXL Big and Tall, built for you at DXL.com. Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world, or at his website, ToddRadom.com. Todd, how you doing this week?
What's happening there, Buster?
I just got back from St. Louis, where, of course, the Arch hovers over the ballpark there. It's one of the most prominent landmarks in any city that has a major league team. And it sort of spurred the thought that we were exchanging back in emails last week about the idea of perhaps having landmarks on ball caps. What do you think?
Yeah, I love this topic because I think it applies in certain places, but not all. And it spurs conversation, which is what this is all about. And I thought about it, and you got very few examples on game caps. But for BP caps, this year, the Washington Nationals have a depiction of the U.S. Capitol Dome. I think your Gateway Arch example for the Cardinals could really work well. The Phillies have their Liberty Bell on their BP caps, right? The Rockies with their logo depiction of mountains. And then you blow it out, and I know in our discussions, Josh and I went back and forth with the Space Needle for Seattle.
That needs to happen. That needs to happen, Todd. You know the love affair that I have with Mariners caps. I would love to see the Mariners put the Space Needle on a cap. That would be marvelous.
Yeah. And what about this idea, Todd? What do you think about this? As I was running underneath the arch over the weekend, I thought about this. Imagine a logo with the Cardinals, the Cardinals on the bat hanging off the arch. What do you think?
You could totally do that, and if you hearken back to the 2009 All-Star Game logo, I believe they combined the arch with a cardinal bird, and
nice. It
really came together very nicely, and the arch kind of traps whatever is in there from a graphic perspective. I'm going to get down in a nerd alert geeky way from a designer's
nerd
end.
Alert!
Yes, thank you very much for that. And when you really think about it, there are some civic landmarks that are just waiting to be exploited. Buster, I think you talked about the Mets primary logo with all of those buildings.
Yes.
But there are certain places that defy local landmarks.
Okay. Like, give me some examples.
Oh, what do you do for Anaheim?
Well, as an employee of the Disney company, I would say that would be an opportunity, right?
Well, I don't know. They have this giant A in the parking lot with a halo. That would look great on a cap.
Yeah, with ears on the halo. That seems really easy to me. Maybe perhaps a little sacrilegious, but maybe little ears on the halo. What do you think?
We could totally do that. I would go down the line and, you know, maybe the Bromo Seltzer Tower in Baltimore. San Diego is kind of a tough one. You live there. It's full of natural beauty, but nothing really iconic comes to mind in terms of a skyline. I think this is something that we should continue to debate. I think it's an open-ended topic.
I think the Marlins should put the home run structure on their cap. What do you say?
Oh, man.
It's in a storage locker. Yeah, right now, exactly. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's someone with Jimmy Hoffa.
Now, you know what, guys? As someone who just bought the Marlins' new cap, please don't turn that one over. Give it a couple years at least of wear. And Todd, next week when we get into cap talk, I want to ask you, because next Sunday, of course, coming up, we have the Red Sox playing the Yankees, and I want to ask you about those caps that were made specifically for these two teams for London. Because I really like them, and I won't get your opinion today, but I want to get your opinion next week on those.
And they're going to be playing on artificial turf, too, which all kinds of weirdness going on for this London series.
There we go. All right, let's get to this week's quiz. What do you got?
All right, here we go, guys. Entering the 2019 season, this club has won the least number of games over the decade that started in 2010. Is it the Padres, the White Sox, the Rockies, or the Twins? This decade, to date, going into this season,
wow,
this team won the least number of games. Padres, White Sox, Rockies, Twins.
Wow. Sure, I'm going to go Padres. Hey.
Padres, White Sox, Rockies, Twins are the
correct
options?
Yep.
Yeah. We know the Twins, they had that playoff appearance.
Know,
the White Sox.
Yeah.
They've had some surges. They've had some rebuilding in recent years. The Rockies made the playoffs, so that's why I got the Padres.
Yeah,
who made the playoffs.
I'd love
in a
to
long
extend my
time.
Lead. I'd love to extend my lead up to four now that we've passed Memorial Day, but I agree with you, Buster. I think it is the Padres.
Oh, come on, dude.
You're both wrong because it's the White Sox.
Wow. Losers. Golly.
No
the
kidding.
Teens. The terrible teens, we're going to call this. And yeah, I mean, we're coming up on the final year of the decade here. So we've got a very big sampling to run off of. And to your point, yeah, you've had little bits of success for a couple of those franchises. The Twins are doing well, but yeah, it's the White Sox.
No wonder why Chris Sale was so cutting up the jerseys and being so angry and embracing the trade to the Red Sox.
Exactly.
Todd Frazier and Adam Eaton, too.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone was fighting over there because they were doing so badly. All right, Todd, thanks for doing this. We'll talk to you next week about those caps in London.
All right, guys, thanks.
Bleacher Tweets.
All right, Buster, we already got one out of the way in our conversation with Tim, but let's get to a few more here, like this one from Matt Benson at STL Cards UK. Says, hey, Buster, the Cards haven't won a series since the 1st of May and see themselves currently at 500 without any major injuries. What's gone wrong for the Cardinals, and could they be surprise sellers this summer?
Yeah, it's clear that Mike Shelter, manager, has concerns about the offense, which is why I shook up the lineup the other day, moving Dexter Fowler leadoff spot, dropping Matt Carpenter down to the fifth spot. I think he'll continue to tinker. And I got to say, just watching them on Sunday, man, Matt Carpenter really struggled at the plate, kept on getting pitched outside, and rather than take the ball to the opposite field, he's pulling ground balls to the right side. Their offense needs to turn. I don't see them being sellers unless we see a complete collapse.
Matthew McDonough is at MDMcDonough89. Hey, Buster, you and Alex Rodriguez were talking about McCann getting into management. Do you think we'll ever see a field manager slash GM in the majors like we do in the NFL? Will a field manager ever be allowed to, quote, shop for the groceries?
No, I think it's much less likely now than any time in baseball history. And we were talking about Brian McCann possibly becoming a manager in 10 years for the Atlanta Braves. It'd be a natural fit. I think the closest guy who might have that some power right now would be Alex Cora of the Red Sox.
Hmm.
I suspect that if he wanted something and he had a particular player in mind, Dave Dombrowski would probably work with him to try to make that happen. I think that some managers have a lot of influence. Some managers have very little influence. I think Alex Cora might be at the top of the food chain in that regard.
Interesting. Rebel Sports is next at Rebel Sports One. Rebel Sports wants to know if this hot stretch by Oakland makes them legitimate contenders Or do they just have too many inconsistencies?
No, here come the Athletics. Every May, the end of every May, it's like clockwork. They start playing better. And this is a team that won 97 games this year, so they're coming on.
Finally, Eric Johnson at ETJohnson1 says, I read an article that was going crazy over Ronald Acuna's first 162 career games. Yet as I check the numbers, Juan Soto's numbers are just about equal, if not better, in most offensive categories. Acuna's awesome. Everybody knows that. But where's the same love for Soto?
Yeah, over the last 10 days, we focused a lot, and rightly so, on the Nationals' team struggles. But Soto's actually turned it around. He was making some adjustments with his approach. When we were in there for Sunday Night Baseball a couple weekends ago, he was out there working with Kevin Long. He is a terrific young player. And so clearly the Nationals have a lot of issues, but Juan Soto's performance is not one of them right now.
100%. Good Bleacher tweets over the weekend. Keep them coming for the rest of the week. Just make sure you hashtag your tweet with Bleacher tweets.
And that's it for today. My thanks to Jack Flaherty and Keith Olbermann and Terry Francona, Tim Kirchen, and to Todd Rademan. I got to say this, Josh, that, you know, we knowing it was a holiday Monday, we taped that in advance.
Yep.
And then last night I saw a tweet from Todd. He got married.
Yeah.
He and his bride, who we referred to as the Texan, I'll leave it at that until we have Todd on the show. They flew out to Vegas and they got hitched. Congratulations
yeah,
to our great friend.
He didn't hint at it at all in our conversation with him. Kept it under lock and key. Good for him for doing that. And I must say, in that picture, Buster, although I'm not surprised, a lot of people think of a Vegas wedding. You go there, you dress all silly. Todd looks sharp. He looked real sharp.
Oh, yeah.
And like I said, I shouldn't be surprised. The man knows what looks good. You know,
and knowing Todd too, because Todd, you know, has such a sense of history and color and the whole thing. I love the fact that the picture that he tweeted out was in front of a classic Las Vegas.
Exactly,
it was a classic Las Vegas sign instead of one of the new ones, which was really neat. And we'll be talking about that with Todd the next time we have him on the show. And thanks to you, Josh, for your work today.
Absolutely, Buster. Good to be back in the studio.
Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.